Now, the FBI searched Mar-a-Lago last week. They had a warrant to search the Florida home of former President Trump for a trove of classified documents that belong to the National Archives. The list of documents taken under that warrant, which was made public by Attorney General Merrick Garland, included four sets of top secret documents and seven other sets of information at different levels of classification. We're talking about the FBI's search of Mar-a-Lago, laws about classified information and presidential record keeping, and the ways that search warrants are issued and executed. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago? What do you want to know that you don't know now? Do you have questions about how these kind of searches might be authorized and undertaken? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Cami Chavis is a professor of law and director of the Center for Criminal Justice Policy and Reform at William & Mary Law School. She's also a former federal prosecutor. Cami, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with some nuts and bolts here. What needs to happen in order for law enforcement to get this kind of search warrant in the first place?
Yes. So what I think is really interesting is, you know, a lot of people want to make distinctions. This is a former president and these are classified documents. But the FBI is a federal law enforcement agency, and there are rules that govern all types of all kinds of searches. And so there are three laws that the search warrant has implicated. But what we know is that you have to have probable cause that a crime has been committed and that there's a reasonable likelihood that evidence of that crime will be found in the particular space specified by the warrant. This comes directly from our Constitution that you cannot issue a warrant without probable cause. So that tells us a lot about the information that would have been contained within the affidavit for the judge to sign off on this warrant.
Now, what we have in terms of rock solid information here is that warrant that's been released and the list of material removed, vague in some cases, but with some indications of the kind of classification levels of the documents removed. From what you see there, what do you think of that initial case that there was probable cause here? It seems like the FBI went in and found what the warrant said they were looking for.
Yes. And again, there have been a number of news media outlets, Associated Press and others, that are asking the court to unseal the underlying affidavit. So what was easily made public, Merrick Garland released the information, so we know the kinds of documents that were retrieved. But what we don't know right now is the information that led up to that. That is under the court has sealed that information, and DOJ at present has opposed, and it makes sense that they would oppose unsealing that affidavit. They've said, and this is a quote: "This is a roadmap to their investigation." And it would be really, in any circumstance, unusual to unseal that affidavit. There's, again, giving information about witnesses and other evidence that the government may have that might jeopardize the investigation before things actually progress.
Right. I wanted to ask you about that affidavit. So this is the material the FBI goes to. I think it's called a magistrate judge says, here's the information we have that says we have probable cause to go do this. This is why we want you to issue this warrant. Is this something that material is ever released in the midst of an investigation?
It's, as I said, it would be highly unusual for it to be released. Of course, if let's say in this case, if any defendant, if Donald Trump were to become a defendant and then had to and was charged or indicted with these particular crimes and there was a trial, there would be discovery in that, and the defendant would certainly be privy to information there. But right now, it's early in the investigation, and again, you're trying to get these documents to see if you even have a crime that's been committed.
Now, this we've been talking sort of generically about search warrants. Now, this is a former president of the United States. Arguments from media organizations wanting this affidavit unsealed have said this is a big deal. This is an unusual circumstance where a former president is being investigated. Some Republican members of Congress have said this, too, including two from Wisconsin. We should unseal that affidavit because we really want to make sure that a current administration isn't unfairly targeting a previous administration. Do you think there's a case to be made that this is special and might work a little differently in this case?
Well, I think it's, of course, the Department of Justice would be concerned about jeopardizing this investigation or any other investigation. And while I'm certainly sympathetic to this, absolutely is a case of great public interest, but there are also, I think, countervailing considerations. And to that, you know, again, if DOJ has the opportunity to present evidence to a grand jury and either someone is indicted or not, you know, that is the process that this would go through. And even again, there's quite a bit of secrecy related to grand jury. To the grand jury for similar reasons. We're worried about witness tampering, and we're worried about jeopardizing an investigation. I think that it's fair. Of course, the public wants to know. I think it's also a very sad moment in our history where we really don't trust on a lot of people on kind of either side of the political spectrum don't trust whatever processes are in place, but these laws and the processes are in place for a reason, and that's to preserve the integrity of the institution and of our criminal justice system.
Talking to Cami Chavis, law professor, director of the Center for Criminal Justice Policy and Reform at William & Mary Law School, also former federal prosecutor, looking at the FBI executing a search warrant last week at Mar-a-Lago, former President Trump's home in Florida. You can join in with your thoughts or maybe your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Greg is with us in Madison. Greg, hello.
Hi. So my comment or question is, what could he possibly do with documents of this sort? And that would maybe lead to an answer as to why he had them. You know, the idea that he's home working late at night just doesn't really fly. His version of work was watching TV and tweeting. So I wonder what he really wanted to do with these documents.
Greg, thanks for the question. Cami, I assume that's part of the question in this investigation. A, what did he have? Why did he have it? What was he going to do with it? Do you have some thoughts on what that investigation would look like?
Yeah. Well, you know, at this point, all the information that we have, and we have quite a bit in terms of thinking about those, the three crimes or the three federal laws that were implicated, one of them being the Presidential Records Act and the other being the Espionage Act. So if I am a prosecutor and I'm looking at those laws, what we're thinking about is not whether necessarily what the president may have intended to do with those, that there may be other federal laws and other evidence that would establish a crime. But simply retaining under the Presidential Records Act, simply retaining those documents and not giving them to the National Archives, the federal law that makes that a crime. This is, you know, for the first couple hundred years of our country, presidents were able to take their documents home. But when Richard Nixon decided, so after they were not in office anymore, they were ready to pack up their things, they could go to their home. But President Nixon had some thoughts about what he wanted to do and just destroying certain evidence. And so this law was passed in 1978 in part in response to that. So again, if we're looking at the letter of that, you know, of that statute, because I think there are a lot of crimes that people, a lot of bad things that people may think that Donald Trump was doing with this, but really simply by not giving the records over to the National Archives when they've requested them. That is the criminal act there. And then the Espionage Act, it's very important that we safeguard documents with that are top secret, and some of the ones classified here, top secret compartmented, things that could be, and the language is, if uncovered and made public, could be exceptionally grave. That's the language, exceptionally grave consequences for U.S. interests. We want to deter people from doing that. We want to encourage people to treat those documents in a certain manner. And so that's why that law exists. And that's the other law that's one of the other laws that has been mentioned. So we can think about all the interesting things that someone might do with those documents, but he hasn't been accused of that, that we know.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about the FBI search and seizure of a variety of documents, including some classified material at Mar-a-Lago. Cammie Chavis is with us, professor of law, director of the Center for Criminal Justice and Policy and Reform at William & Mary Law School, former federal prosecutor. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this search? What do we not know that you want to know? What do you think of this idea that some media organizations are promoting and some Republicans in Congress, that the affidavit, the material that led to the issuing of the search warrant, should also be revealed to the public? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk about the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago and rules about search warrants and classified documents with former prosecutor Cammie Chavis, now a professor of law, director of the Center for Criminal Justice, Policy and Reform at William & Mary Law School. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. Let's go back to your calls now. Jacob is with us in Madison. Jacob, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just a little bit astounded as to how he actually was successful in arranging to get boxes and boxes and boxes of documents shipped to Mar-a-Lago when nobody was aware of this. Who else participated in helping him get this stuff shipped? He's a con artist. He's got a good part of the American public conned, and I just don't. I don't understand or accept this kind of behavior from a former president who is now a private citizen.
Jacob, thanks for the call. Cammie, what do you think?
You know, I think that the caller brings up a really good point. I always, especially tell my students, as somebody who's been, he has not yet been accused of a crime. We just have the search warrant, right? Mm-hmm. And there's just this information. But if he ends up being indicted for these crimes, I doubt seriously that it would just be the president alone, because of course, with other crimes, you have to have, an accomplice, right? Sometimes in order to make sure that this all goes according to plan. So I think that Jacob is right, that there could be multiple people, and they have to be pretty high level people who, in my opinion, should have known better. And again, even if the documents were correctly shipped to the president to have him review while he's at Mar-a-Lago, then why weren't they returned? That is a question, and there should be very specific protocols when we're talking about the certain levels of documents that we are talking about, protocols for sending them out, receiving them back in, controls as to who is able to see them and who is not. And so somewhere along the way, it really does seem, if true, that some of those protocols have been breached. So I think that we would be not only looking at the individuals who could be accomplices in this, but we really need to investigate, as Jacob said, how did this happen in the first place?
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Kurt joins us now in Milton. Kurt, hi.
Hello to you.
What did you want to bring up, Kurt?
Well, I'm a retired military officer with over 30 years in the defense community and military, handling way above top secret level information. And we do that in a facility called a SCIF, a Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. And there are strict rules and things for that. But I had, you know, in the handling of it and all of those things. But I had heard that there was a SCIF in Mar-a-Lago. And, you know, that kind of changes everything if it was an approved facility to have very beyond top secret information. The other thing I'd like to know is, you know, in the handling of it and all of that would be all taken care of through proper channels if he indeed had a SCIF. So I'd like to know if that's the case. And I'd also like to know, do they have classified material or SCIFs at other presidential libraries?
Kurt, thanks for the call. My understanding, I read up on this a little, Cammy, my understanding was there was a SCIF in Mar-a-Lago during the Trump presidency. It is now no longer considered an active SCIF facility for that at this point now. But Kurt sees, you know, if it's handled properly, says it's maybe a game changer. What do you think?
Yes, I mean, I think that's true. And as I said earlier, if you know, if that is where the president was spending a lot of time and needed to have access to documents, that would make sense. But there, again, there would be protocols. What's interesting here, particularly when we look at the Espionage Act and the Presidential Records Act, it's, to me, it seems to relate not to things that were happening during his presidency, but the fact that the National Archives requested these documents after he was no longer president, and again, and indeed received, I think, something like 15 boxes back in January. And there seemed to be an incomplete transferal back to the National Archives. So I think that is where if there's criminal liability, where that would come in.
Thanks for that call, Kurt. We'll go now to Danny with us in Beloit. Danny, hello.
Hello. Yes, I had a question. I was wondering if with the DOJ or the FBI, when they took an inventory and they carried everything out of the house, if Trump's attorneys wasn't available to be able to document everything, doesn't it open a Pandora's box to where pretty much anything could be stated that was in there?
Danny, thanks for the call. That's interesting, Kevin. Usually when a search warrant is executed, does the person receiving the search or their legal representation usually get to tag along and observe what's being removed?
No, and I think that, again, what I think is so interesting about this search, we're talking about potentially, as I mentioned, information that could be exceptionally grave, have exceptionally grave consequences to U.S. interests, right? There are every day in this country search warrants that are executed. We're all very familiar with the no-knock warrants and certain types of drug raids and things like that. People do not get to tag along, and usually you are asked to kind of step aside. What you do get, and what the law does say that you should get, and that is a receipt for things that were taken out of the office. Out of the area to be searched. And so I think that if we take some of the arguments that we're hearing, and I've always been, I am a critic of government overreach in certain types of criminal activity, but it's really interesting that we don't hear those same arguments when we're talking about low-level other types of crime. Drug crimes is one thing I'm thinking about. This warrant, this situation was there was lots of notice. We know that the National Archives was looking for this information. We know they requested it multiple times, and we know that that their agents came to the house with a search warrant, and they did knock and announce themselves, and they went through the search process. So again, I think that the criticisms that are being levied against this are valid. There's a lot of distrust in many communities about law enforcement. But if we are to believe that the FBI would have planted these documents, then do we believe that every single person who's arrested for drugs or other type of contraband, that law enforcement is planting it there? I just, the equivalency, I think is really interesting here. Argument. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Danny. Time for one more quick call with Brent in Waukesha. Brent, hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My question is kind of along the same lines. As far as, you know, with a search warrant, I always thought that it was, you know, to prove a crime has been committed, not to search for a possible crime that, you know, you're searching for the crime, but you're proving that it's already happened. And in this case, we've said many times the crime hasn't happened yet. We're just trying to see if it did happen.
Gotcha. Brent, thanks for the call. That brings us back to where we started and this concept of probable cause, Cammie. And in fact, that doesn't mean a crime has been committed. It means there's a probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right. There's probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed and that evidence of that crime can be found at the location, reasonably likely to be found at the location to be searched. And I think it's very important here because when we're talking about what crime, we're not talking about whether this person has given government secrets away. That's not what the Presidential Records Act says, and that's not what the espionage says. Both of those acts are really talking about how evidence is handled. You are not supposed to conceal. That is language from the Presidential Records Act. Conceal or destroy presidential records, things that were created by the president in his duties, in his formal duties as president, or by his staff.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Cammie Chavis from William & Mary Law School. She joined us for a look at classified document laws and the process of search warrants in the wake of the FBI search of former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home last week.